My name is Jeff Lerner, and I interview elite performers from a wide range of disciplines, entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, scientists, artists, and more. This is Unlock Your Potential. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Unlock Your Potential. Jeff Lerner, your host here. Always so excited to be back with you, having amazing conversations with amazing human beings. And today, we are joined by an extra amazing human being. She's extra amazing. Her name is Amy Porterfield. You've probably seen her, unless you live under a rock or on another planet. She's one of those people that seems to be everywhere on the internet. She's a digital marketing strategist, online business coach. She teaches entrepreneurs and small business owners how to grow and scale their businesses through the power of online marketing and social media. I was introduced to her through a good friend, Kristen Boss, who was on the show. You audience members may remember our episode with Kristen not too long ago, and she connected us to Amy, and we're so glad Amy's here. Amy, welcome to Unlock Your Potential.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so glad you're here. And we had a little bit of coordination challenges getting you on the show because you, and I totally relate to this, you have been slammed because you have a new book. You want to talk about that?
I do. My new book is called 2 Weeks Notice, How to Find the Courage to Quit Your Job, Make More Money, Work From Wherever, and Change the World. I wrote this book because 14 years ago, I was in my very last 9-to-5 job, desperately wanting more freedom. I wanted to work when I wanted, where I wanted, how I wanted. And I realized I had always had a boss. I was in my 30s and had never, ever done anything on my own. But I had this huge desire to figure out how to navigate a life in a business that I really was proud of. And so that's when I took my entrepreneurial journey.
So I feel like 14 years ago, was that 2009, 2008, somewhere around there?
2009, 2010 is when I officially started.
Okay, so I feel like we're gonna totally geek out. And like, I had a, do you know who Jason Flablin is? He's a like webinar, he's probably one of the best webinar marketers in the world. He's done like $250 million in webinar sales or something, just deranged. But anyway, I had him on the show the other day and he got started online in 2008.
Okay.
And we just, it was like two old guys sitting around at like the, you know, the VFW or the Moose Lodge or something, being like, remember back in the day when we were just kids?
It was very different than it is today.
Because 14 years in internet marketing time, that is like, I mean, you're like an OG.
Yeah, for sure. It was, if for a woman to be starting back then, it was very different. There was almost all men, internet marketers, we call them bro marketers, and they just did things very different than how typically women would market, but it's all I knew. So much of my marketing in the early days was very masculine because I just learned from these guys who were incredible, by the way. You know, funny enough, my start was because some of those internet marketer guys that I learned from. So real quick, when I was still working in my 9-to-5 job, I worked for Tony Robbins and I was the director of content development. And Tony had this meeting one day and brought in a bunch of online business owners. And they were all guys and they had digital courses and masterminds and memberships and different products. And they all talked about their businesses. And that's the first time I ever even knew that this world existed. So any OGs that are listening, Frank Kern, Evan Pagan, Brendan Bouchard, these are Jeff Walker. These are the guys that were at the table. And they were going around talking about their businesses. And I thought, I don't know what they're doing, but I want a piece of that. Like each of these guys had freedom that I had never experienced before, and I wanted it. Here's a surreal moment though. Last weekend I went to Napa. I went to a mastermind with a bunch of my peers, and I'm sitting at this big table, kind of like the one that I was in 14 years ago when Tony brought him into his office. And there's Jeff Walker, who's a friend of mine. There's Brendan Bouchard. If you told that girl that many years ago that you'd be sitting in a mastermind with a small group talking strategy, I would have said you would have lost your mind. So, you know, you can never dream big enough. Like the world, the life I live now, beyond my wildest dreams. But it was really a surreal moment.
Well, and what's interesting, this is from the conversation with Jason, we were talking about it, like, because obviously we know that OG group, right? Like I know I was on all their lists. I know that this whole crew that you're talking about, they were like the original internet marketing posse.
Yeah.
But like, and some of them have and clearly you are in this category, as is Jason, as am I, have evolved, have maneuvered and twisted and turned as, you know, like 2008, 2009, there were like article marketing and like Squidoo lenses and like YouTube didn't even hardly exist. And Facebook literally, I think, didn't exist unless you were like a Harvard student. And then like Google AdWords got really big from like 2008 to 2012. And then there was the Google slaps, but Facebook was on the come up and YouTube was on the come up. But like it was all, it wasn't like it is now because social didn't feed into the search algorithms. So you really didn't optimize for content.
Right.
But then that started to shift and then people shifted. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, when influencer marketing really emerged, and Kristen and I talked a lot about this, like a lot of these people, they didn't make that, they never turned that corner because they were like more like technical, like behind, you know, they were really good copywriters and they knew how to like do all the techie stuff, but they weren't like pop into your feed and inspire you type of guys or more.
Right.
And so it's just interesting who's still here and they all made a lot of money. So it's not like anybody needs to work. In this group, but some people just love the game and some people stepped away from it. But you've obviously, you talked about even being a woman back then. I don't think I can name a big female digital marketer from 2008, 2009, 2010. I don't think I can name one.
It's wild that there were very few back in the day. And a few women that were, you know, I started to follow and use as guides, they weren't nearly as big as they are today. So it was hard to find someone at that status. I'm really proud of how women entrepreneurs have made their way into this world. And some of them are crushing it beyond a lot of the guys. Like one of my friends, Brooke Castillo, she has, Life Coach School. And she crushes it. She had a $50 million year with a very healthy profit margin. And it's funny because she's on these big stages and she's doing these big things. And I said, how are you getting all these invites? She rarely showed up on social media, rarely had a public image. It was really her business, not her. But now she's everywhere. And she's like, Amy, money talks. When you start to make that kind of money, doors start to open up. People, a lot of the guy marketers started noticing her, inviting her to their stages. It's just funny to see kind of how that all evolves. But yeah, back then, people like Brooke, you did not see.
Yeah. So talk to me then. I mean, do you mind kind of walking us down memory lane, so to speak, and that journey and as particularly the inflection points where you had to evolve to stay progressing?
Absolutely. So when I went out on my own, it took about a year. So in my book, 2 Weeks Notice, I talk about the transition from you deciding in your 9-to-5 job that you want to do your own thing all the way to leaving on that very last day and going off to do your own thing. I think there's a runway that if you really pay attention to how you spend your time, whether it be in 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, whatever it might be, it could set you up for massive success. So I put together a really solid runway. I outline it in the book, but the day I left the San Diego offices with my very last 9-to-5 job, I went out on my own and I started to do social media for small businesses. Now, I had known enough about social media working at in my corporate job, and I had a few clients, and I hated it. So like for 2 years, I built a business I hated. I didn't like doing service work. I didn't like doing the social media for them. And I also didn't know what it meant not to have a boss. So I let my clients boss me around. Like, what do you want? Jump, how high kind of situation. I did everything for them and then realized this is not sustainable. So about 2 years in, I realized I have to change my business model. And that's when I started to create digital courses. Now back up, and in my first year, I did launch my first digital course. It was about social media. I made a whopping $267 when I thought I'd make like $100,000. Because when I came on the scene, social media started to really take up steam and people were only sharing their highlight reel, mm-hmm. which is kind of what people still share today. And so it looked like everyone was making millions. So when I launched my first digital course, I thought I'm gonna make a lot of money. $267. I was devastated, but I kept going, kept trying things. And about 2 years in, I had my first successful digital course. I made $30,000. I thought that was the most money in the whole world. I couldn't believe it. And I just kept doing that over and over again. So my secret to success is I found something that worked and I just doubled down on it. So I launched it, made 30,000. Then I launched it again, made a little more. Launched it again, made the same course. By the last time I launched it, it was almost $1 million launch. So I stuck with the same thing, just made it better. But at that time, I got good at digital courses and I got really good at webinars. So those are the two things that I think I do best in my business. And around that time, people started saying, how are you doing all these digital courses and launching them? Like, how are you making so much money? How are you so successful in it? Show us how. So that's when I made the transition to teach how to create digital courses, how to do webinars. And that has been my bread and butter for many years now. So the business I have today, we've generated over $80 million. We have over 50,000 students. And the business I have today looks very different than the business I started 14 years ago. And I want some people to hear that, because when you go out on your own, everything's not set in stone. Everything you do isn't as serious as you think it is. You just got to get into action to get more clarity on where you need to go. So starting out is so scary, but it's not as serious as you think it is. Things are going to morph. You're going to find your way.
Yeah, one of the concepts I talk a lot about that I feel like you're kind of touching on, I coined a term for it, and it's not a very elegant term, but it's the best I could come up with. It's called horizonalization.
Okay.
Meaning pushing out the time horizon and developing the cognitive skill of looking at problems through different horizons of time. And, you know, so I'm curious, like you're talking about that 14 years later, $80 million later, masterminding with people that you used to look up to and be inspired by and probably never really thought you'd be a peer with, all this stuff, that was all already true then, based on two things: consistent enough action and a long enough time horizon. But did you have the discipline then to see it that way?
Oh, no.
and then in that case, what kept you going? And let's contextualize that question with the reality that most people stop.
Most people stop. It's true. So one thing I learned when I worked for Tony is that 80% of the success of an entrepreneurship is your mindset. And when he first said that, I was like, 80%, come on. Like, what about the strategies? What about the how-to? What about the step-by-step kind of stuff you got to do? But when I got into it, I realized, oh, whoa, he is right. Like, this is a mindset.
If anything, he undersold it.
Totally. You're so right. I just had no idea. I always say, if you want massive personal growth, become an entrepreneur, because being an entrepreneur shines a light on every one of your weaknesses, your challenges, your fears, and your strengths. So when I got into it, here's why I think I'm here today with a successful business. I was really clear on my why from the very get-go. I didn't want to work for somebody else. I didn't want to be told what to do, when to do, or how to do it. I didn't want to be on someone else's time, and I didn't want to be on someone else's dime. Like, I really was done with that. And so the truth is, my why was just this much bigger than my fear and worries, just this much bigger. So when things didn't work out, and let me tell you, friend, they didn't work out over and over and over again, I just kept getting up, and I did it scared. I was freaked out. I remember so many conversations with my husband, like, I am not cut out to do this. This is not my thing. I was a better employee than I am an entrepreneur. And he kind of just kept pushing me out there. And that's a little secret that I talk about in my book. Be careful who you tell, but you've got to tell a few people of your plans. If you're going to leave your 9-to-5 job and go out on your own, you got to be careful who you tell, because 99% of the people you tell, whether they love you or not, are going to tell you all the reasons why this will not work. They've never done it, but they're going to tell you all the reasons why you shouldn't do it, because it's just their fears, their own perspective. Keep your dreams tight to your chest. Only share it with the people that you know will actually help you keep moving forward. That's a mistake that a lot of people make. They tell too many people, get too many opinions, they never take action.
So how do you know, and I guess, let me step back. I love this direction.
you know, I feel like people that do kind of the stuff that we do, like we swim in certain waters and we operate within certain meta themes. And like, that's why we align and like these conversations just happen. Cause you're like already, you're saying stuff that it's like, I have different words maybe, but it's the same stuff we say. You know, the people that love you typically want to keep you safe.
Yes.
More than they want to see you happy. And that doesn't mean they don't want to see you happy, but they only want to see you happy if it doesn't mean that you're unsafe.
Absolutely.
And so they, because their perception of entrepreneurship is that it's scary and risky and dangerous, they're not weighting it towards your potential happiness. They're weighting it towards your potential danger. And so how do you know though? How do you know who are the people in your life that are the few that you should entrust? Because I agree with you, you shouldn't tell no one, because then there's no one to feel, frankly, there's no one that you'll be embarrassed of if you fail, if you never told them what you were doing. So who are the ones that exactly. you tell?
So you tell those people that you know have your absolute back no matter what. You're looking for the ultimate cheerleaders in your life. And that might not be a spouse. And let's talk about that for a second. But yeah. Before we get there, for me, I told my husband, literally, he thinks I could do anything. Same with my mom. She thinks I could land on Mars. Like she is such a supporter. And then my best friend, I literally only told three people because I knew most people could absolutely not take my dream and not squash it in the moment. And I was so vulnerable at that time, I would have believed anything I heard. So I knew I had to protect myself. But there's this debate that I've been talking about on some podcast about, especially women, but this could work for men as well. You tell your spouse and your spouse doesn't want you to do it. And you just said it's because they want to keep you safe. They want to keep the family safe.
Yeah, they want to keep themselves safe too.
Yeah, just not you. It's like the whole family unit. And you going out on your own might mean that you lose money because you're not in your 9-to-5 job. Or maybe if you are staying home with the kids, it might mean that now the kids might get neglected. And, you know, I want you to be a stay-at-home mom or dad or whatever it might be. And so there's all these reasons.
Can I interject another reason that I think needs to be said?
Please.
Is it? They might sense that the person you need to become to succeed at what you're wanting to do is going to be intimidating or have outgrown them.
That is something that I think I was going to bring that up, that I really do think you're going to change and that scares somebody else. I don't think they consciously think that. It's a very subconscious thing. Life's going to change. You're going to change. You're going to start doing things that are outside of our circle of how we do things. That is a threat.
And by the way, they're right.
It's totally right.
Will totally change you.
I don't even know. I don't even know who I am. Like I would never recognize the woman I am today. That is not me 14 years ago. My husband has seen me dramatically change. And sometimes he probably wishes I was a little different. You know, I'm so aggressive, so go for it, competitive, all that. He's like, whoa, where's the girl I married? But he's super supportive of it. But here's the thing. This is the controversial part. I believe if you go to your spouse, whether you're the wife going to the husband, a wife to a wife, husband to a husband, or the husband going to a wife, I don't even care the dynamic. But if you're going to your significant other and they do not think you should do it, they are not in support of it. The controversial thing that I bring up is you've got to find a way to do it. Because here's why. If you don't, you will lay in bed at night starting to resent the person laying next to you. You will definitely think that they have squashed your dreams. Now, if they don't want you to do it, there's other ways you can get around it. Number one, you might need to go to therapy. Like you guys might need to work it out, because who wants to be married to someone that holds them back? The other thing though, is there's other ways to get started, like with a side hustle. And they might just want you to slow down and kind of ease into it. I started with a side hustle. I say that I had a side hustle that turned into an $80 million business. I had a few clients on the side while I was still in my 9-to-5 job. That gave me a little confidence to think, okay, I'm starting to think like an entrepreneur. I'm starting to put the pieces together. So when I left my 9-to-5 job, I had two clients. Did it pay my salary? No, but then I was able to hustle to get more. So you've got to work something out, even if your significant other doesn't believe in you, because the answer is not to do it. That absolutely has to be taken off the table.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say, I think I agree.
It's a hard one. It's a hard one.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, my wife is like, insanely supportive of me.
What if your wife was like, don't do it. This is risky. Stay in your 9-to-5 job. I don't want you to have your own business. What would you have done?
Yeah, well, it's hard for me. So, I mean, I dropped out of high school to become a jazz musician because
That's true. You have a little bit of a different story. Yeah. I was kind of studying you before and I was like, damn, this is cool. So it might be an anomaly.
Yeah, I mean, I made a decision early on, and I think this is a point for reflection with people, but I made a decision very early on in my life when I was still a kid that I was not going to live a life that was determined or dictated by the pursuit of money. Mm. Money's important. I'm not like anti-money. I like nice stuff, but freedom's more important to me. And it was from as soon as I was able to start making quasi-adult decisions, I was like, if I ever have to choose, I'd rather be free than rich. And so I became a jazz musician. So I don't even know, like, nobody would ever be married to me that would object to that line of thinking. I'll just say that. But so it's, you know, but it's, so it's hard to give counsel, but I agree with you. I mean, I think that a successful marriage is based on your advocacy for the best version of the person you're married to.
Amen. That's so beautifully put. And if that's not the case, then maybe there's some other things. I know we're going deep here, but some other things you need to examine in your relationship, because this is probably not the first time something came up that you feel as though you can't go after what you want. And so I think you need to kind of examine what's going on. But I bring this up because it happens a lot. A lot of people haven't gone after starting their own business because they feel as though they don't have the support they need. And sometimes it's not going to come from your spouse and it's going to come from something else. But one thing I did when I was still in my 9-to-5 job, I actually started seeking out a mastermind. I wanted to be around other entrepreneurial people because I'd never been around entrepreneurs like that. I wanted to be a part of it. I wanted to sit at their table. So I paid for it. So that's another thing. If you don't have the support that you think you need at home, but you're going to go for it, you figured out how you're going to do that, get into a group of people, whether you pay for it or it's free. Surround yourself with people that are doing bigger and better things than you. It's absolutely necessary for your success.
Yeah, so I think that this spouse thing, you know, I actually think it'd be cool to go even deeper on this because, you know, I feel like I never know where these podcasts are meant to go, but it seems like every episode, it makes itself clear. And you got to think, like, there's an audience member out there, like, they are dealing with this right now.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think my show gets, I don't know, 1,000+ listens per episode. So let's assume 1,000 people are going to hear this. I'll bet you 50 of them have a dream that they don't know how to talk to their spouse about, or they tried once and it didn't go well and they haven't brought it back up.
It's such a big thing that in my book, I put scripts of how to have the conversation.
You did. Oh my God. That's what I was going to say is like, can we dig into how to have the conversation? But you've already done that in your book.
Yes. And one of the things that I say in the scripts that I give my readers is that you can't focus on like, I want to create a business that I'm going to sell this widget for this much money. And this is how I'm going to sell it. It's not the features of the business. It genuinely is the heart and the dream and the desire that you have to focus on. You have to go for the heart versus the brain when you have these conversations, because you can't say my goal is to make $100,000 by this date. You have no proof that is ever going to happen. And they're going to know that. But I think they need to understand what's underlying. What does it mean for the family? What does it mean for you? What does it mean in general? And so I think that's where the conversation starts.
Yeah. And one of the core concepts that I know that you're intimately familiar with as an entrepreneur is that we train ourselves to ask how, not if.
Amen.
And that's the conversation with your spouse is like, listen, how may mean not now.
Yeah.
But how can we figure out how this can be a thing? Because I'm not going to be able to let it go. It's any yes. more than I can let go the fact that my eyes are brown. It's just a part of me, and it'll turn into resentment if we don't figure out how.
That's a beautiful way to put it. I love that. And I think there has to be some honesty. And here's the truth. It might not be one conversation. Right. It might be 3, 4, 5 conversations. And someone might look at me and say, oh, Amy, it's easy for you to talk about this. You had a husband that wanted you to quit before you even quit. Like, he was ready for me to go out on my own. I traveled a lot in my job and I was newly married, so I hardly saw my husband. But the truth is, most of my students have spouses that don't support them. It's a conversation I have every single week with my students. So I know what that looks like. You know, I have a student, her name is Rachel, and she's a pharmacist, or was a pharmacist for many, many years. It was the job her parents wanted her to have. She went after it. They were so proud of her. She made a lot of money as a pharmacist. And then COVID hit and all hell broke loose. She's like, it was the craziest time in my life being a pharmacist during COVID. No one wants to be that.
Right.
And she realized she was miserable. So on the side, as a side hustle, she started buying property and turning it into luxury Airbnbs. And that's how she started to make money on the side. She needed actually to take her brain off of the pharmacy situation. When it started to make a little money, she went to her husband and said, I want to do this full time. And he laughed. He's like, what? No, like, you're a pharmacist. You've got a really good, solid job. You can't quit to buy property and turn it into luxury Airbnbs. But she was determined and she stuck with that side hustle till it started making more money than her pharmacy job. And her husband's like, ooh, you should make that a full-time thing. Like, she just got to work, put her money where her mouth was, and she proved him wrong. And I hope sometimes she rubs it in his face, joking. But that's how she did it. There's ways to get around this, but starting now to me is the only option. You got to get something going.
Well, and I think that, you know, one of the things, and you know, this is like, we have a lot of common ground here, because again, at Entre, my platform, this is like one of the most common conversations. I mean, we hear about it from our advisors, we hear about it from our coaches. And do you happen to know Barry Baumgartner from Sage? I feel like,
yeah, I work with them. They're doing my event for my book.
Okay. Yeah. So Barry, she'll say, you know, when you're on stage, you're only dealing with four objections, right? Time, money, doubt, and spouses. Right. So anyway, tell Barry I said hi, but she's the one
that is so good. Time, money, doubt, and spouses. Yes. Yeah.
Those are the four objections. She taught me that. So anyway, tell Barry I said hi and thanks for the lesson. But anyway, so this is something that is just, you know, first of all, if you're out there and this is, well, frankly, if it's time or money or doubt or spouses, just know you're in good company. These are the four. But also, I think that in particular, let's say with the spouse or even maybe with the doubt or even time or money for that matter, you don't have to you don't have to quit X and become Y, where Y is an entrepreneur, to start becoming more entrepreneurial. You can start becoming more entrepreneurial. You can start building the skills that will end up feeding into the success at whatever the other thing maybe ends up being someday without quitting your job. And I think one of the biggest things that I try to counsel people on, and I'm wondering if you want to double click on this and talk more about it, is like let's use your friend who's a pharmacist, right? Mm-hmm. Are you instead of thinking I'm a pharmacist, think I'm a marketer whose product is pharmacy services. Mm. Or I'm a marketer whose product is plumbing, if you're a plumber. I'm a marketer whose product is you know, thoracic heart surgery, if you're a cardiologist or whatever, right? Like, and start thinking, how do within the delivery of whatever product or service I'm involved in the trade of, how do I become more entrepreneurial? How do I become more marketing minded? How do I become like, how do I start to understand the fundamental product to market transaction that's happening and how to deliver more value and how to break apart the process and how to optimize the process? You can do all that in a job. And if you're in a, job, it means you work at a company that, by the way, has all the different divisions that you might need to have when you have your own company someday. So figure out how accounts payable works. Figure out how payroll works. Figure out how you're on the inside of an established organization. Like, they can't teach that stuff at an MBA school. You're already on the inside. Learn how it all works.
This is exactly what I did. When I worked for Tony Robbins, and after that meeting, when I realized, holy cow, there's a whole new world out there, we were starting to launch digital courses online. This was fairly new. And these guys were kind of giving some advice around that. Right after that meeting, I was in content. I asked if I could move to the marketing department. I had been with the company over 6 years. I had clout there, and they were going through some transition, so it was like perfect opportunity. I moved into the marketing department, and I got to work on launches for digital courses, which literally is my whole business now. So I didn't know what was going to be, but it kind of turned out that way. Then I got in the trenches. I got to see what converted, how to create funnels, how to grow an email list, like all this stuff I needed to learn. I got to be in it and do it. I think that is huge. Also, in the book, I talk about building a runway to quit your job. In the first 6 months, my runway looked like get as much education as I could. So one, moving to a new department, working in it. But number two, I chose a date to leave and I put it on a post-it note. And I gave myself, at that point, it was like 6 months from there. I gave myself 6 months to leave this job. And every day I looked at that post-it note and said, what's one thing I need to do to move me closer to that date? Is it to read a book, listen to a podcast, make a phone call, buy a digital course, whatever it is, because I needed to educate myself. And one of the things I did is I found this woman who had built a business online that I absolutely wanted. Like, she's not even in the industry anymore. But at the time, she had the business I wanted. She was doing the things I wanted to do. I emailed her and I said, I know this is not what you offer, but can I pay you for an hour of your time to get on a phone call with me and I can ask you questions about your business? And she said, yes. So the day the phone call was happening was during my lunch hour, but I was in an office with very thin walls. I got underneath my desk, got on my phone, and I whispered the whole time. She must have thought I was crazy. And I was like, tell me about your business. How did you make your first offer? How did you start your email list? I wanted to know everything. And she was very generous with sharing everything with me. But I had to do things during that time to leave my 9-to-5 job to get the information I needed, exactly what you were saying. I think that time is so golden.
Yeah, and also money. Like, that's another part of the conversation you can have with your spouse to say, I understand, you know, probably at least part of your fear is financial.
Yes.
You know, what amount of additional savings or what other, you know, whatever would make you feel a little more comfortable? And maybe you have a 12-month plan and maybe you have to make some sacrifices in the meantime to build up a little bit of a security blanket for your spouse. And say, hey, I'm starting my side hustle, but here's 25 grand to make you feel better about it. I mean, it's when you push the time horizon out, a lot of things that seem impossible start to become possible because you remove the artificial constraint of it has to happen right now.
Amen to that. I mean, my book's called 2 weeks notice, but I don't mean in 2 weeks, you're going to quit your job and start now. It's when you're ready and you give that 2 weeks. So I tell people 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, you can decide how long this is going to be till you actually leave. And in the meantime, you could start your side hustle, start thinking like an entrepreneur, start making money. But I usually do say, let's not go. If you really want to leave your job and start an online business, let's not go over a year. I think you do not need more than a year. And that starts to become excuses and you start to get comfortable. And I remember at one point it was like 2 months before I left, I looked at my husband and I said, I could probably do both. Like, I could continue to work for Tony and have my side hustle. I think this could work because I was so scared to leave. And he's like, you could do whatever you want, but just for the record, remember your why. You don't want to work for somebody else anymore. You're literally reverting back because you're scared. So that's why it's important you tell someone that will keep you accountable.
So I have a question, and I'm really curious to hear your strategy, your perspective and your strategy on this question, and I have my own. But so you and I both run organizations. And do you mind if I ask what your headcount is at your organization?
20 full-time employees all across the US.
Okay. So you have 20 people that work for you, and you have an organization that sort of espouses this idea of freedom and striking out on your own and not, you know, fire your boss kind of thing, right? You just wrote a book called 2 weeks Notice. How do you balance that energy and that culture and that ideal within your own organization where you don't want to demonize the concept of employment because you have 20 of them that you're really relying on and you want them to love coming to work every day?
Such a great question. And I love this. It's something that I've definitely put a lot of time, thought, and energy into it. So first of all, I'm glad you asked this question because I want to back up a little bit and I don't do a good job of saying this and I really want to say it. Some people listening love their 9-to-5 job. They're getting paid well, they're respected, they're getting their promotions and their raises. It's working for them. Not everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. Not everybody should be an entrepreneur. But if they're listening to your podcast, I'm guessing they've at least explored it. I tend to get on podcasts where people are at least thinking about it. But if I looked at my sister, who's 2 years older than me, she's a school teacher. She looks at my life and thinks it's crazy. Like, she would not want to be on stages. She doesn't want to have a podcast. She doesn't want anything that I have. Not even I make a lot more money than her. She doesn't care. Right. So like, she is not meant to be an entrepreneur, and I know it and I respect it. However, those that want to be an entrepreneur, then I'm going to support them all day long. But getting back to my team, I've got 20 full-time employees and I talk about entrepreneurship every single day. And here's how I balance that. I've created a business that doesn't feel like a corporate environment. It's very important to me. I don't want it to feel like you're going to your job every day. So number one, we are all virtual. We have been from day one. Number two, we work a 4-day work week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 8 hours a day. No one works Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. We don't work late into the night. We used to. I used to have a different environment, but I knew I had to change it. So now we don't work Fridays unless we're in a launch, which is rare. In addition to that, we have unlimited time off. So people don't just have 14 days paid vacation. They could take longer as long as they can manage their time and manage their responsibilities. And then there's perks like I pay for a life coach for them if they want one. And so there's other just different perks that we do throughout the year. And we treat it as though everybody gets to run their own thing. So I want my employees to feel like they're mini entrepreneurs inside my business. It's a very conscious decision though, because if it felt like corporate, if it felt like the 9-to-5 grind, I would be losing people left and right.
Yeah, I'm glad I asked, and I assumed some variation of that answer, that like, not all jobs are created equal. And I think that, you know, this is the entrepreneurship hill that a lot of entrepreneurial influencers want to die on, of like, entrepreneurship is amazing and employment is not. I think it's an artificial dichotomy. At the end of the day, people want to be happy and they want to be fulfilled and they want to feel like their life has purpose and they want to feel like there's balance. And I think that one of the reasons we've seen what we've seen in the last couple of years with this great reset or great resignation is like, corporate employers stopped prioritizing, and maybe they never did. I don't know. I've never had a job, right? I dropped out of high school and became a musician. But like, I don't get the sense that they were really prioritizing the fulfillment and the quality of life of their employees.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I think it's a bigger discussion now than ever.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But like, the point is, if somebody can look at their life and say, what do I need to be happy? And everybody has their different calibration towards certain rewards. But if it's flexibility, the ability to travel and spend time with my family or to do meaningful work or whatever, like, create a job environment where people can have those things. And frankly, if you can't, then I would argue the market should reject your business as inhumane and irrelevant and unnecessary. Like if you're starting a company and the only way your company works is like to, you know, employ 14-year-olds in a sweatshop, like, get the hell out of here, man. The world has enough businesses. We don't need your business.
Hey there, sorry to interrupt the show, but I just have a quick favor to ask. So we recently broke into the top 100 podcasts in the entrepreneurship category. We've been hovering around 75 and we're really trying to push up into like the top 20 and grow the impact of the show. So if you enjoy what we do here and you're a supporter, the biggest thing you could do to help would be to leave us a positive review. Whatever platform you're listening on, you should be able to leave a quick review, let the world know what you like about the show. Thank you so much for your time, and let's get back to it.
And I think one thing that I've seen change over the years, the content creator economy, is really changing how businesses need to show up, because there's a lot of people coming up in the ranks that they're like, you know what? Screw this. I'm gonna create content. I'm gonna start my own YouTube channel. I'm going to do TikTok or whatever it might be. And many of them, it doesn't work. But for some, it absolutely does, and they figure it out. So these businesses that are creating businesses that aren't attracting people that absolutely love where they work and what they're doing, they're seeing a harsh reality that people are going to leave. They're going to jump. There's too many opportunities.
And it's your best people are going to be the ones that are creative enough and persistent enough to make that work. So you're going to be left with the people that couldn't make that work, not that didn't want to.
Yeah, absolutely. So very true. And then just to circle back, anybody who leaves my company to become their own boss, I'm going to have to celebrate that all day long.
Yeah.
I have one gal in my company that I am sure one day she is going to do her own thing, and I'm going to be her biggest cheerleader. I can't teach this stuff and not support it in my business. Now, if they're leaving me for another business, that's soul crushing. Now I'm going to do everything I can to keep them. But for their own thing, I'm going to have to wish them well.
Yeah, we're so aligned in this regard.
And I will tell you this, when I left my 9-to-5 job, the company made me a really funny video. We were on the road a lot, so we did kind of silly things like that. And at the end of the video, I've never talked about this before. At the end of the video, Tony was in the video and he wished me well. He knew I was going out to do my own thing and he wished me well and he sent his love and he cheered me on. That's the kind of boss that I want to be. Because I felt very supported and like people believed in me. So anyone that's listening, that if they're losing people to entrepreneurship, let's wish them well and push them out with the most support, because it means the world.
Yeah, and the average term of employment now, I want to say, is 20 months.
Like, really?
They weren't going to stay forever anyways. Like, if you work with somebody, it's very unlikely you're still going to be working right alongside them in 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, we get resumes every day and I look at them and it's like, you know, it's a new job every 2 years. It's pretty normal now.
You know, now that I think about it, same. That's exactly what I'm seeing.
Right?
So yeah, I get that.
So as an employer, if you have a scarcity mindset and you're like, you know, never leave, even though you're miserable while you're here, like, I don't know. I feel like there's a whole generation of businesses. This is a terrible thing to say, but we're all just kind of waiting for them to die off.
It's kind of sad, but listen, I support entrepreneurship, so I'm going to be there.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. So I know we have only a little bit of time left, but I really would like to paint the vision for people of your call it your ascendancy, right? So I think we left off with you relaunched the same course multiple times. Third time, I think you did just shy of $1 million. We probably don't have time to get too into like the launch formula or the launch cycle. That's like a whole science conversation in and of itself. Yeah. But so from one just shy of $1 million to 80 million, like talk to me through the mechanics of scaling the business, if you would.
So what happened was once I started to see that if I stick with one course and continue to launch it a few times a year, each time I get better and better, that's where I just started to focus my attention. And then what happened was, as I mentioned, people started to say, teach us how you're creating these courses. And that's when I found like my vibe, my bread and butter, which was a course I created called Digital Course Academy, which is $2,000. And it teaches you how to create a course and how to launch it. So everything, no stone left unturned. So I started to launch that, but I started to add affiliates. So this is how I've scaled my business. I got a course that did really well. I invited affiliates to partner with me and I continue to grow my affiliate roster. So when I launch, it's like a $10 million launch and I share some of that revenue, but it makes a really big difference in terms of how many people I can reach. Now, if you use affiliates, your email list starts to grow. The people that come into your world want to know what other products you have. So my other products started to do well. I've never had more than 3 digital courses at once, though. I am a believer in less is more, but do really good with what you've got. So today I have 2 digital courses, 1 membership. You can only get into my membership if you go through Digital Course Academy. And then now I have a book. So that's basically, it's like the book, an intro product, Digital Course Academy, and a membership. I've got a customer journey. It took me a few years to get clear on my customer journey, but that's what it is. But it's a simple business model. I've got funnels for each of them. Everything's evergreen, but that Digital Course Academy, I use affiliates for that. So it's a really big launch. And then I also affiliate for other people, my peers. And I've affiliated since day one, meaning I'll promote somebody else's course on a product that I would never offer myself. And that has proven to be incredibly lucrative as well. And then I support some software that I tell my students to buy. So software like Searchy or Kajabi, they're platforms for digital courses. ConvertKit is an email service provider. I make money when people sign up through my link. And so through affiliate marketing and a few courses and one membership is how I've been able to grow that business. I don't do one-on-one coaching. I don't do group coaching or anything like that. This is literally my business model. And it's not the business model for everyone. In my book, I go over multiple business models. My book is not about creating digital courses. It's about creating an online business you love. So I talk about the different business models. I love personal coaching and group coaching for people that really want to do that. I love the mastermind model. It's just not for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of different business models, and a lot of them are not even overtly online businesses, for example. Like being in like the digital agency business, for example. That's really not an online business, but it's a hyper tech enabled business that different parts of it can be taken online, whether it's customer acquisition or it's how you fulfill your services or whatever. So it's, yeah, I think that, I'm curious, how do you advise somebody that says, hey, I'm interested in this, call it the modern entrepreneurial landscape, that, you know, there's these different options. And although I feel like I may know the answer now that your book is out, but where do you send people that want to start with kind of a 101 level introduction to the opportunities in the digital world?
So where do I start personally in my business?
Or no, where would you send somebody? And I'm guessing maybe now the answer is the book, but
it would be the book now, but also my podcast. And I want to talk about that a little bit, because anyone starting an online business, or really a business in general, but my specialty is online businesses, I really do think it starts with content creation. And I talk about this in my book. It's a very big section of the book. And I, when I talk about content creation, I'm talking about not just posting on social. I believe if you build your business on social media, you are building a business on rented land. Elon Musk takes over Twitter, changes the algorithm, boom. If you are doing business solely on Twitter, you're screwed. Or same thing with Instagram, Facebook, those algorithms change, the policies change. And if you're doing business solely on those social platforms, you do not own that platform. You do own an email list though. In order to grow an email list, you got to create content. So when I talk about content creation, I'm talking specifically about a podcast or a video show or a blog. I think every online entrepreneur should have at least one of those. I have a podcast. I don't have a video show. I don't have a blog. I just podcast, but it's consistency with that original content. Every week, rain or shine, you're going to see a podcast out from me every Tuesday, every Thursday. No matter what, it's happening. I didn't have consistency in the beginning and I really struggled. I felt like only my mom was listening to my podcast. When I started to do it every single week, rain or shine, and then started to get interviewed on other podcasts that mentioned my podcast, that's when I started to see massive growth. And so weekly original content. On your podcast, I think it's important that you mention a freebie, some kind of giveaway to grow your email list. I almost always, in the beginning of my podcast, I'll mention some kind of freebie I have, because growing the email list is the most important asset in my business. An email list converts 4 times higher than any social media post when done right. So for me, when people are saying, where do I even start? I send them to my podcast, because my podcast is a free way to get into my world. And you can bet I'm going to mention my book on my podcast somewhere in those 500 plus episodes. So I think it's important we have a really great place for people to start in our world. Early beginning entrepreneurs should start with my podcast.
And so you've been doing your podcast how long?
Since 2013. And in the beginning, I really struggled, for the record. I didn't see a lot of growth. And then I really wanted to get to 1 million downloads a month. That has been my goal. I'm not even joking, for probably 5 years. Yeah. I wanted 1 million downloads a month and I could not hit it. I struggled and struggled. And I finally got up to 500,000. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, we're doing good. I paid a bunch of money for an audit. I tried all these things and I stuck with it. And then when I finally went to 2 episodes a week And when I started to do quarterly promos of my podcast, like very specific campaigns to invite people to listen to my podcast, that's when everything changed. In December 2021, I had 500,000 downloads a month. January 2022, we hit 1 million, like that, but all the work we'd been doing for years, yeah. And then had been able to sustain that all through 2022. And I say that to say, some things just take a lot of time. Like mm-hmm. you gotta be patient, because I thought it would never ever happen for us. So I think that's the lesson in entrepreneurship.
Yeah, it really is. And you seem to be, you know, I think different people have different personality types, different dopamine reward systems and yeah. whatever their wiring is, where they just struggle with it more than others. But again, that's why we started talking about pushing out your time horizon. Like, don't, you know, and I would say, I mean, it's one thing, and I'm curious your take on that. Actually, I have to ask, what platform do you use to chart your podcast stats?
We use Liz, how do you say it? Libsyn? Yeah, Libsyn.
Oh, Libsyn. Okay.
I use Chartable, but I can't, like, I just don't, I'm not in.
And Chartable, we look at Chartable in terms of where we fall, but we use Libsyn for just like all the specific analytics that we're looking for. But the reason I bring this up, and I really want to say, not to say like, look at me, I'm getting all these downloads, but to say that last night.
Well, I'll say it. Look at her. She's getting all these downloads.
Thank you. But last night I was looking for a document in Google Docs, which could be a really scary place when you've been in business for that long. And I was looking for a document that years ago we used. And I accidentally came across something from 2017 of all my goals for the podcast. And one of the goals was to be in the top 25 of the business podcast. And that was 2017. Like, that's how long I've been chasing this. Mm-hmm. And someone might say, well, why does it even matter? It matters because if you get higher up in those charts, people that never knew you existed can find value in what you do. Like, it does actually matter. But I thought, oh man, I've been chasing that dream for a long time. So yeah, it takes time.
Yeah, that's inspiring. I appreciate it. I've had my show now for 2.5 years, I guess.
And so that's like a baby show. Like, you have so much opportunity ahead of you.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you ever beat yourself up or ever look for bigger numbers, but holy cow, please give yourself grace, because I feel like this is such a long game. Podcasting is a long game, but would you agree it's such a great way to get people into your world? Whether you have a few thousand or 1 million or whatever, it's still a great tool.
Yeah. I mean, this is a great idea. Like, I want to do a podcast about why you should do a podcast.
Yeah, I think you should.
I released my book last year, and the reason I started my podcast was basically to build a list, to build a network, a well-networked list for when, because I knew I was going to write a book, and like when I finally am ready to write my book, I'll just send it to all the people that I've had on the podcast and ask them if they'll share it with their list. And that's basically what I did. And we launched the number 2 book on the nonfiction list on the Wall Street Journal. And that was basically my entire marketing strategy.
That's huge. But
I took a year and a half
and built a podcast and got guests on the show and built all these. And so that was why I started it. But what I never imagined, and I mean, we're doing it right now, we're illustrating the relationships that you build, the people that you meet. And I hate to say it, but the levels that you sort of ascend through in terms of, like, there's guests that I'm getting on the show right now, guests like Amy Porterfield, who a year ago might have looked at my show and been like, well, I don't know, you know, you're not established, the show's not established, I don't know. But like, if you just play the game long enough, like, your competition is not who's better than you, it's just who's willing to play as long as you.
Amen.
In podcasting, literally. I mean, what you may know the stats, but like, I think 99% of podcasts don't get to like 20 episodes.
It's true. And I got to look at something really fast. I'm looking at my phone because I wanted to share something with you. I know we're going to wrap up in a second, but I thought it was so interesting. So Gary V did this thing on his channel where it said, here it is. It said, new podcast creation has fallen off a cliff. The number of new shows that debuted in 2022 was down 80% since 2020. And the reason for this is people give up earlier than they should, because podcast is a long haul kind of strategy. But I also, I watched that and I thought, you know what? This is a great time to get into podcasting because maybe there's less competition. I remember when I first started podcasting, it was so easy to get featured on all the charts and stuff. Now, you know, it's definitely harder, but that decline shows me one, people aren't sticking with it, and you can beat out your competition by sticking with it, exactly what you just said. And two, maybe there's a little less competition, so it's time to get in.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Okay, so Amy, this has been amazing. For people that want to go into the Amy Porterfield universe, where would you direct them?
So my book is called 2 Weeks Notice. You can buy it wherever you get books online. And if you want a bonus when you buy it, go to 2weeksnoticebook.com. So 2weeksnoticebook.com. And I'm just at Amy Porterfield everywhere on social.
Hey, it's Jeff here. If you liked this episode of Unlock Your Potential, it would mean so much if you would like and share the episode on whatever platform you're listening or viewing on. And if you really like what we're doing here and you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving a review. There is so much work that goes into these episodes, and you leaving a positive review lets us know that that work is reaching people, and especially it helps us reach other people. Your review could be the reason that someone else decides to tune in, check out this podcast, and unlock their potential and ultimately level up the quality of their life. So thank you so much for your support and for listening. Especially if you like or share or leave a review, thank you for helping us spread the word, and thank you for unlocking your potential to go make the world and your world a better place.